As a leader in an intercultural context, and here I'm convinced, you can't simply impose your own habits and expect others to adapt. That's precisely what my intercultural leadership trainings aim to develop. It's all about a greater sense of intercultural sensitivity and the flexibility to respond appropriately. Hello and welcome to the next episode of The Coach Talk. I'm Kai Kochmann, your host on this coaching and consulting show. Imagine this. A German management team meets with colleagues from India for an online meeting. The Germans have a clear agenda, every minute is planned, the slides are ready, the goal, to make decisions. After 90 minutes, the meeting ends. Everybody nods. The next day, nothing happens. No decisions, no implementation, just polite emails. We will think about it. And the Germans think, excuse me, we had decided everything. Welcome to the Coach Talk. My name is Kai Kochmann, and as someone who moderates around 50% of my functions and events with international participants, I repeatedly experience how fascinating, sometimes exhausting, but mostly enriching intercultural cooperation can be. So let's dive into the deep end of the globalized world and international leadership. Let's dive into the topic of intercultural communication. Now, when talking about culture, there is always a risk of slipping into clichés. Germans are direct. The Japanese avoid conflict. Or Americans are superficial. Well, of course, this is never true across the board. But, and this is important, we need categories in order to at least describe differences at all. Erin Mayer, that's an author from Canada who's been writing very interesting books like The Culture Map, a book I always recommend in my trainings. Erin Mayer, I'd like to quote her. Erin Mayer writes, "Culture is like an operating system that runs in the background. You only notice it when you try to use a different one." And that's exactly what happens in international teams. We suddenly switch operating systems without instructions, without updates, right in the middle of a meeting. And that's exactly on what I would like to focus in my episode today. A few maps that help us not to get lost in this diversity without the illusion that they represent the whole truth. So out of this vast and huge topic, I thought I will pick five dimensions of cultural differences that are perhaps mostly relevant for the international arena in politics as well as in international business. One dimension is about communication, the direct versus the indirect way. Let's start with a classic one. In Germany or the Netherlands, plain language is valued. You say what you mean and you mean what you say. Saying, "I'm not convinced," is not an attack, but simply a factual position. In many Asian cultures, Japan, China, South Korea, the opposite is true. Speaking directly is considered rude or even disrespectful. There, communication largely takes place between the lines. So, I remember a scene from an international workshop. A German manager asked his Japanese colleague, "Can we finish this by tomorrow?" And she smiled and said, "Well, that could be difficult." He, the German, heard, "Yes, of course, it's some effort with it, possibly, but I expect it's gonna be done." She meant, "No, no chance." The result? It wasn't finished, not because the colleague from Japan didn't try hard enough, but because she was unable to convey more explicitly to the German manager that there were technical requirements that could not be met at that time. But out of politeness to her senior colleague, she phrased it in a soft and polite manner. So the learning here, culture determines how much nuance a message can tolerate or requires, and in between, there are often entire oceans. The second dimension is about giving or receiving feedback, confrontational versus diplomatic. Erin Mayer describes this very vividly. In the Netherlands, for example, feedback is direct and factual, almost athletic. In Japan, on the other hand, criticism is packaged. It is elegantly danced around. An example from my consulting practice, an American manager led a team with colleagues from France and India. And that was a lady. She wanted to give open feedback. So she began the meeting with a sentence like, "First of all, great job, everyone." And then she shot around her actual point. "But we really need to work on being more efficient in our reporting." So the French took it in stride. The Indians, nodding politely, interpreted it as, "She's disappointed. That was a disaster." So what we learn from this, the good intention of being blunt, straightforward and direct. Feedback is always culturally coded and can hurt and wound people. So here too, what is considered appreciative in one culture may be perceived as hurtful in another, or conversely, as too soft. The third dimension I would like to focus on is hierarchy, and the question here whether leadership is more egalitarian or status-oriented. Hofstede calls this power distance. Gert Hofstede, by the way, was a Dutch social psychologist, anthropologist and professor best known for his pioneering research on cross-cultural differences and organizational culture. He's widely regarded as one of the founders of modern intercultural communication theory. So his work gave me personally the first insights 20 years ago. So I can only recommend books from Gert Hofstede, which, by the way, I will put also in my show notes. So let's turn to this important dimension of the differences of hierarchy. In Scandinavian countries or the Netherlands, leadership is egalitarian, meaning that bosses are colleagues on an equal footing. They address each other informally, they discuss issues, they seek consensus and sit in a circle at eye level, not just symbolically. Yet, in many Asian or Latin American countries, on the other hand, leadership is status-oriented. Even the seating arrangement, and sometimes even who has the right to speak and when, is predetermined. A boss is a boss there, and it would be rude to openly contradict him. It's important to understand that this is not a sign of backwardness, but an expression of respect and social harmony. So, if a German manager in India asks for open feedback, they will usually be met with polite silence or friendly words, not because no one has an opinion, but because the situation and hierarchical differences simply do not allow for it. And as a trainer of intercultural communication, I'm often asked, "Kai, let me know, isn't it true that when I'm in Germany I should follow German rules, or that when I'm in India I have to adapt to Indian rules?" And my answer would be, yes, in principle it is fair to expect that the local culture will shape the way people think and act. But, you know, being responsible for teaching or for conveying an idea of intercultural sensitivity and adaptability, I see it differently or more broadly. For me, the essential competence of any leader is the ability to empathize and to step outside one's own operating mode. That doesn't mean denying who you are, but it does mean being able to anticipate what's coming toward you and to adjust accordingly. As a leader in an intercultural context, and here I'm convinced, you can't simply impose your own habits and expect others to adapt. That's precisely what my intercultural leadership trainings aim to develop. It's all about a greater sense of intercultural sensitivity and the flexibility to respond appropriately. Because leadership is successful not when the ego wins, but when the goal is achieved. Now, the fourth dimension I would like to talk about is the process of decision-making. And here we have a variety between consensus and top-down. In Germany or Japan, decisions are often prepared jointly, a lengthy, thorough process involving a great deal of consultation. In France or the USA, on the other hand, the boss often makes the decision top-down and quickly. This leads, by the way, to a curious effect. In Japan, decisions take forever, but implementation is lightning fast. In France, on the other hand, the decision is made immediately, and then there are weeks of discussions, turns, and back and forth about how to implement it. Well, what is better? I don't know. Both approaches have their merits. You just need to know which system you are currently operating in. And last but not least, the fifth dimension is about trust and time, with the question, relationship first or task first? In the USA, Germany, or Scandinavia, trust is built on performance. If someone is competent, delivers results, and works reliably, then that relationship is strong and trust is being built upon. In Southern Europe, Latin America, or the Arab world, on the other hand, trust is built through relationships. Only when you know each other, laugh together, eat together, drink together, only then and after that you can do business. A Brazilian colleague of mine once said to me, and I think he was right on spot with that, "You Germans want trust through contracts first. We want trust in people first." So again, both perspectives are legitimate, but when they clash, there's trouble. So make sure that you anticipate who's part of this decision-making process and in which dimension should you involve or include people, and when is also time for a decision. Sometimes this needs a little discussion up front. At the end of my podcast, I would like to focus on two more points. One is about conflict resolution. The topic of conflict, well, I remember a workshop with a German-American management team. There was an open conflict. Everybody knew it, but the Americans wanted to stay positive. So the Germans said, "We need to talk this out now." The meeting was a disaster. Why? Because the German accused the Americans of superficiality. The Americans accused the Germans of aggressiveness. It was only when we understood that, one, Germans see conflict as part of clarity. So they understand conflict is part of every discussion, even part of every organization, and should be spoken out. Americans, whereas, see conflicts as a disruption of a team spirit. And again, both are right, depending on their cultural operating system. That was the moment, by the way, when communication suddenly became less about being right and more about wanting to understand why does somebody else sees the same situation and judges it completely differently. So with these ideas and examples from my own work, and by using concepts and models from Hofstede or Erin Meyer, like I did in this podcast, I have to focus on one point that I would say, of course, it's a dilemma I'm in when I use models, because they reduce complexity. I'm well aware of that. So cultural models are maps, not landscapes. They help us orient ourselves, but they never replace a genuine view on the other person. And I'm fully aware that in a globalized mobile world, we all carry multiple cultural influences within us. A French manager in Singapore thinks differently from her cousin in Lyon or Paris. And a German who has worked in China for 10 years certainly no longer communicates in a typically German way. Therefore, these models are tools, not truths. They show tendencies, not identities. And here's my book recommendation of the episode. As I mentioned this book already in my episode, it is something I would like to outline and really recommend here at this point. It's from Erin Meyer, the ASEAN professor. It's called The Culture Map, Decoding How People Think, Lead, and Get Things Done Across Cultures. The author, Erin Meyer, sees herself as a kind of tour guide through the complex and sometimes fragile landscape of intercultural communication. In her book, she offers a practice-tested model, a kind of compass, which I find particularly valuable because it's highly pragmatic and directly applicable in a management context. It's full of concrete examples drawn from her own professional experience and from leaders she has worked with around the world. So, again, Erin Mayer, The Culture Map, 298 pages, published by Wiley. So let's up today's episode with some conclusions and takeaways. When we talk about culture, it's not about labels, but about awareness. Those who understand that people from different systems communicate based on their cultural backgrounds can identify potential conflicts earlier, classify them differently, build trust in a more targeted manner, and make collaboration more sustainable and easier. Remember our example from the beginning, the meeting with the German and Indian colleagues? The Germans wanted to make a decision while the Indians politely said, "We will think about it," and then nothing happened. Now, some solutions. What happened there? The Germans understood the sentence to mean, "We will review it briefly and then give the green light." For the Indian colleagues, however, it was a respectful, indirect form of rejection or delay, a polite no, wrapped in a cloak of harmony. So the question remains, what could both sides have done? Quite simply, they could have asked again without exerting pressure. For example, somebody could have said, "If I understand you correctly, you still need time to consult. Can we clarify tomorrow whether and how we will proceed?" This would have created clarity without losing face. And the Indian side? With a little intercultural courage, they could have said, "We will still need to discuss this internally. We cannot make a decision today." That would have been more direct, but still respectful. And that is perhaps the essence of intercultural communication. Not to understand perfectly, but to consciously reduce misunderstandings. Not to insist on uniformity, but to enable joint translation. Or, as Gerd Hofstede said, "Culture is the software of the mind, and like software, it can be updated." So, at your next international meeting, just pause for a moment. Ask questions, listen, and observe. Not to prove yourself right, but to understand, to really understand, the other person's world and perspective. Because communication is not what we say, it is what the other person hears. And that's it for today from the Coach Doc. Thanks for listening. Really great to have you with us. I hope you got some ideas to take back into your own leadership practice. I'm Kai Kochmann. Take care, stay curious, and talk to you soon.